afternoon. It's Friday, December 18th, 2020, and time to read from today's Sioux City Journal. I'm Sandy Barron. I'm a volunteer, and I'm pleased to be able to bring you the news today. On the front page, we have today's mini editorial. This comes to us from Paul Roizen of Sioux City. Make America Great Again. Quote, COVID-19 will just disappear, end quote. Pardon friends and criminals. Wall left unbuilt. Claims election was stolen despite 40 failed lawsuits, including being turned away by heavily Republican Supreme Court. Refuses to congratulate the new president. What an example to our young people. What a legacy our current president will leave for the history books. And again, this comes to us from Paul Roizen of Sioux City. And now for the first story. Vaccinations underway in Sioux City. And this article is accompanied by a picture showing Tracy Larson, Chief Nursing Officer, and Lawrence Voles, Chief Medical Officer, administering the Pfizer COVID vaccine to critical care nurse Mary Jones and physician Joseph Luer at Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center in Sioux City, by Dolly A. Butts and Mason Doctor of the Sioux City Journal. From Sioux City, Dr. Joseph Luer said he hardly felt any discomfort when Dr. Lawrence Voles injected Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine into his left arm shortly after 2 p.m. Thursday. Luer, medical director for the emergency medicine at Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center, and Mary Jones, a critical care nurse, were the first of the hospital's employees to be vaccinated against the novel coronavirus, which has claimed hundreds of lives in Siouxland over the past 9 months. Unity Point Health St. Luke's also began administering some of the first doses of the COVID-19 vaccine in Woodbury County to its frontline medical providers on Thursday. The shot was actually less painful than other immunizations that I've received, Luer said, moments after being immunized by Voles, Mercy's chief medical officer. I think the public should trust that it's gone through the rigorous analysis that it has. I think it's safe, and I encourage people to get it as soon as they can. Luer and Jones sat in chairs on a stage in the hospital's lighter room in front of a lime green background that bore the hospital's logo. Before Tracy Larson, Mercy One's chief nursing officer, administered the vaccine to Jones, she asked her, Mary, are you ready? I'm ready, Jones replied. I couldn't be more ready to give it to you, said Larson, who wore blue gloves and a white lab coat. Beth Hughes, Mercy One's Western Iowa regional president, said it was fitting that both Luer and Jones, frontline workers and veterans of the hospital, were receiving the shots first. I am delighted that both of you get the first two vaccines, Hughes said. And I'm especially delighted what this means for our organization here at Mercy One and what it means ultimately for this community that we're so blessed to serve. Jones expressed emotions of excitement and relief. I think I'm just ready to be part of the solution and hope that we can start turning the corner, building immunity, and getting people back to normal life, she said. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration late last week gave its approval to a COVID-19 vaccine made by Pfizer and BioNTech, and Iowa began receiving shipments of the vaccine this week. A separate vaccine made by Moderna is expected to receive emergency use authorization from the FDA on Friday. The Pfizer vaccine, which is not yet available to the general public, is being given first to frontline healthcare workers. Next in line will be residents and staff at nursing homes and other long-term care facilities. Mike Bushby, an occupational therapist, was one of the first at St. Luke's to be vaccinated Thursday. I feel fantastic. I feel very blessed to be able to receive this and kind of, hopefully, encourage others to do the same as we go forward and distribute the vaccine to a wider community, Bushby said. Bushby said that although he and a handful of others in Sioux City have now received their first dosage of the vaccine, it's too early for the public to let its guard down. Masks and social distancing will remain for the time being. Healthcare workers in Sioux City have borne the brunt of serious outbreaks in the spring and again in the fall. Myself and my colleagues who have been working here, there's a lot of fatigue and we work hard to keep our spirits up, but it's been a tough few months, Bushby said. And to be moving forward on something that's going to make our lives better, the community safer and healthier and happier, and to be able to get back to some of those things that we've set aside feels wonderful. And there's a second picture coming along with this story showing Kristen Beal, infection prevention specialist at Unity Point Health St. Luke's, administering a dose of the Pfizer vaccine to Dr. Mike Kafka at the Sioux City Hospital on Thursday. No white Christmas for Siouxland, no snow in forecast for holiday week. This comes to us from Brett Hayworth of the Sioux City Journal. From Sioux City, Siouxlanders who are dreaming of a white Christmas might want to keep listening to such songs by Bing Crosby or Kelly Clarkson and avoid looking outside. 1 week out from Christmas Day, the long-range forecast has an almost zero chance of snow to come. Speaking from the National Weather Service office in Sioux Falls, meteorologist Matthew Dux on Thursday said the weather pattern of drier and warmer conditions than normal over the last few weeks is holding strong. This year is certainly looking like the odds favor not having a white Christmas, Dux said. Jenny Baker Jepson of Lawton hopes the forecast somehow shifts. I love the snow season. I love to watch the flakes fall from above, especially if I can sit and watch it with nowhere to be but home, Baker Jepson said. I do honestly hope we get piles of it after the 23rd, when my mom will be here for a couple of weeks. Dux said the Weather Service defines a white Christmas as having 1 inch of snow on the ground on Christmas Day. Dux said for the Sioux City and Sioux Falls regions, white Christmases happen about 40% to 50% of the time. Sioux City got two measurable snowfalls, one first on October 25th with a record of 3 inches, and then another 3 inches on November 10th, with none since. There hasn't been snow on the ground in December in Sioux City and regionally. The forecast through December 25th has some seasonal temperature days plus warm days of 47 degrees expected Sunday, with 51 on Monday and 44 on Tuesday. The average daily high temperature for the third week of December in Sioux City is 31 or 30 degrees. The chance of precipitation through Wednesday is zero. Dux understands that the forecast isn't pleasing to people who envision a tapestry of white on lawns. It makes things feel more festive, more like winter. The forecast may take the fun out of the holiday for folks, he said. A dozen more COVID-19 deaths recorded in Siouxland on Thursday. This comes to us from Dolly A. Butts of the Sioux City Journal. From Sioux City, a dozen more COVID-19-related deaths were reported in Siouxland on Thursday. According to Iowa Department of Public Health data, Woodbury County recorded two more deaths, bringing its total to 153. Siouxland District Health Department didn't confirm any additional deaths in a release issued Thursday, but noted that 70 new cases of the virus were added to the Woodbury County's case total, which now stands at 11,649. The Northwest Iowa County's 14-day COVID-19 positivity rate remained relatively unchanged at 16.4%. O'Brien County recorded three new deaths Thursday, while Plymouth and Ida counties recorded two. Dickinson, Sioux, and Cherokee counties each added one new death. Ida County's COVID-19 positivity rate of 22.9% was the fourth highest in the state. Buena Vista County ranked sixth, 21.8%, while Cherokee County was eighth with 21.5%, and Crawford was 10th with 21.1%. Siouxland District Health Department reported that 59 patients were hospitalized Thursday at either Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center or Unity Point Health St. Luke's, down one from Wednesday. Of those patients, 37 were hospitalized for treatment of COVID-19. Another 22 people in the hospital have the virus but are hospitalized for other reasons. One of the total, 34, of the total, 34 are Woodbury County residents. Siouxland sees 4 guilty murder verdicts in quick succession. And this is the editor's note. The Journal today continues its countdown of the top 10 stories of 2020 in Siouxland, as chosen by the Journal staff. The number one story will be revealed on December 27th, and the Journal's annual Newsmaker of the Year will be named on January 3rd. This article comes to us from Nick Heitrich of the Sioux City Journal. From Sioux City, this is number 8 of the top 10 stories. Because of delays caused by the coronavirus pandemic, Siouxland saw 3 murder cases tried in a 6-week period in 2020 and a 4th resolved weeks later. The virus led court officials to halt trials and in-person hearings for several weeks during the spring and summer, a move that delayed murder trials that had previously been scheduled for earlier in the year. Once trials could resume, the cases were tried in a flurry this summer. In late July, Jordan Henry, 30, of Sioux City, stood trial in Woodbury County before District Judge Stephen Andreasen on charges of first-degree murder and first-degree arson for the January 24, 2019, strangling death of Elizabeth Bockholt in a Sioux City hotel room. In November, Andreasen released his verdict, finding Henry guilty of second-degree murder and arson for setting fire to the hotel room in an attempt to conceal the crime. He is scheduled to be sentenced in January. In mid-August, Elliot Stowe, age 23, of Castaigna, went on trial for a first-degree murder in Monona County District Court for the June 2018 beating of his grandmother, Cheryl Stowe, in their rural Castaigna home. District Judge Zachary Hinman, in November, announced his verdict, ruling Stowe guilty of first-degree murder. Stowe is scheduled to be sentenced on December 22nd. A Dakota County jury in early September found Andres Serber, age 29, of Wakefield, Nebraska, guilty of first-degree murder and other charges for the November 1st, 2016 shooting death and dismemberment of Craig Kubik of Emerson, Nebraska. Serber was sentenced in November to life in prison without parole. He has appealed his conviction to the Nebraska Supreme Court. Just over 2 weeks before she was scheduled to go to trial for the first-degree murder, Melissa Camargo Flores, 22, of Dakota City, entered a plea agreement with prosecutors and pleaded guilty in Woodbury County to second-degree murder for the April 8, 2018 stabbing death of Kenia Alvarez Flores in Sioux City. She was sentenced to 50 years in prison on December 3rd. With 7 murder cases pending, a large number of high-profile cases could again take place in Siouxland in 2021. Sioux City saw 5 homicides in 2020, above the annual average of the two. 2 of those cases have been scheduled for trial, but there have been no arrests made in the other 3, leaving the possibility of more murder charges to be filed in the coming year. Matney named County Court in 6th District. From Hartington, Nebraska, a former county attorney in Dakota and Cedar counties has been appointed to the bench in Northeast Nebraska. Governor Pete Ricketts on Thursday named Edward Matney of Hartington a county court judge in the 6th Judicial District, which includes Dakota, Cedar, Dixon, Thurston, Burt, Dodge, and Washington counties. The vacancy was created by the retirement of Judge Kurt Rager. Matney, age 50, has practiced law in South Sioux City since 2012 and has served as the deputy Dakota County attorney. He was Dakota County attorney from 1998-99 and also from 2004 to 2008. He also served as Cedar County Attorney from 2001 to 2003 and 2018 to 2019. Matney was also an administrator and attorney with the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services from 2009 through 2012. He has a bachelor's degree in Spanish from Iowa State University and his law degree from Baylor University. Sioux City to offer free holiday parking. The city of Sioux City is offering free parking in downtown ramps during the holidays. The four city ramps, Discovery, Heritage, MLK, and Rivers Landing, will be free to use beginning December 24th at 5 p.m. until December 28th at 5 a.m. for the Christmas holidays. Visitors will have the same opportunity the following week from December 31st to January 4th for the New Year's holiday. In addition, Discovery Ramp will be free for the time between December 25th and January 4th. Each parking ramp has skywalk accessibility to adjacent buildings. Feenstra says flood of mailed ballots, reason for pause. This from Aaron Murphy of the Journal Des Moines Bureau from Johnston, Iowa. An historic number of early and absentee ballots cast in the 2020 presidential election and President Donald Trump's quixotic legal challenges are why Congressman-elect Randy Feenstra said he is not yet ready to call Joe Biden the U.S. president-elect. Feenstra, a Republican from Hull, is the newly elected representative for Western Iowa's 4th Congressional District, far and away the most conservative-leaning of the state's four districts. During recording for this weekend's episode of Iowa Press on Iowa PBS, Feenstra on Thursday said he looks forward to January 6th, when Congress will receive the Electoral College results. Democrat Joe Biden defeated Trump, the Republican incumbent, in the presidential election in November. Ever since the race was called for Biden a few days after the November 3rd election, Trump and his allies have mounted a string of dozens of legal challenges, almost all of which have been defeated, rejected, or tossed out, including by the U.S. Supreme Court. The Electoral College this week confirmed the results, with Biden earning 306 Electoral College votes and Trump 232. That prompted many Republicans who had previously held back to finally say they consider Biden the president-elect. Feenstra, during Thursday's recording, said he's not ready to do that until Congress confirms the Electoral College results. Meantime, he is one of roughly two dozen congressional Republicans who signed a letter to Democratic U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi asking her to investigate the election results. The great thing about our country is that we have this foundation on this electoral process, and we saw that play out this past Monday when the Electoral College cast their votes, and then we have the opportunity to do that on January 6th, and I look forward to that opportunity, Feenstra said. This is the first time ever in our country that we've had mail-in ballots predominantly, Feenstra added. So I think we all want to make sure to protect what we have, and there's still some litigation out there. For me, it's all about let's make sure the litigation is done and let's move forward. More than 100 million early ballots were cast nationwide in the 2020 election. Of the roughly 60 lawsuits filed by the Trump administration and campaign and its allies, only one has been successful, a minor ruling that did not significantly change any vote totals. The legal challenges have not been successful in proving any voter fraud occurred. Feenstra is headed to Congress after defeating nine-term incumbent U.S. Representative Steve King in the Republican primary in June. Feenstra then won a comfortable victory over Democrat J.D. Scholten in the general election in November. During Thursday's recording, Feenstra said he hopes future COVID-19 pandemic relief bills will include more assistance for small businesses and for businesses and workers in the food supply chain. He also expressed a desire to work on reining in federal government spending. When asked about sustaining the Social Security program long term, Feenstra said one way to help is by having a balanced budget and reducing national debt. How you make sure that system is sustainable is managing your debt and managing your budget. And right now we have an out-of-control system, Feenstra said. So I'm sort of a fiscal hawk, simply saying you have to control your spending. If you control your spending, then you can start making sure everything else is sustainable, like Social Security and Medicare. This episode of Iowa Press will air on Iowa PBS on Friday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at noon. It will also be available online at iowapbs.org. Sioux City man sentenced to prison for kidnapping, by Nick Heitrich from the Sioux City Journal, from Sioux City. For nearly 2 years since their daughter was shoved into a car by Michael Marshall Limoge, her parents have watched their children remain afraid. Family members have attended counseling. Some need prescription medication, they told a judge on Thursday. This attack took away my peace and left me with fear and rage, the girl's father said. Though he said he had no doubt Marshall Limoge suffers from mental illness, Chief U.S. District Judge Leonard Strand said it's not clear what role, if any, that played in on March 22, 2019, when Marshall Limoge followed the then 14-year-old girl and her younger brother in his car to a convenience store, then approached them twice as they walked toward their Morningside home before grabbing the girl and pushing her into the passenger seat of his car in an alley in the 3300 block of Garrettson Avenue. The girl was able to escape through the open driver's side door. Anybody who would do this is an extreme danger to society, Strand said. Strand sentenced Marshall Limoge, who pleaded guilty to one count of kidnapping, to 168 months or 14 years in prison, choosing to go above the 108 to 135-month range recommended by the federal sentencing guidelines formula. Marshall Limoge, 24, of Sioux City, declined to speak during the hearing in U.S. District Court in Sioux City. Instead, his attorney, Bob Tiefenthaler, read a letter of apology Marshall Limoge had written to the victims during his police interrogation after his arrest. I am truly and sincerely sorry for what I did to you two kids. I don't know what I was doing, the letter read in part. A neighbor heard the victim scream and saw the girl's brother in the alley with Marshall Limoge's car behind him. The witness was able to get the boy to safety and call police after Marshall Limoge sped past. He was located at his home hours later and arrested. Marshall Limoge told police that he tried to kidnap the girl because he was angry. Tiefenthaler introduced evidence and testimony from a psychologist that showed Marshall Limoge has had anger issues since age 12. He has been diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and depressive disorder, and also has symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder and antisocial personality disorder. He needs help, Tiefenthaler said. We need to get him the help he needs so he can get out of prison and be a productive member of society. Christmas time with Sioux City Symphony goes online and on the air by Earl Horlick of the Sioux City Journal. And this article is accompanied by a picture by Ari E. Leibowitz of Sioux City, who took a picture of the Sioux City Symphony Orchestra conductor Ryan Haskin getting festive in preparation for Christmas with the symphony in this December 2018 file photo. And in the picture, Ryan Haskins has on a Santa hat. From Sioux City, the Sioux City Symphony Orchestra will be starting its 105th season with an annual tradition presented in an entirely new way. Christmas with the Symphony, a concert featuring the Haig Brothers Holiday Jam, a multi-piece band that plays sparkling holiday classics and new contemporary arrangements, will be televised on KTIV-TV and live-streamed on the Symphony's app, scso.live, beginning at 7 p.m. on Saturday. The concert won't be presented to a live audience due to concerns over COVID-19. Our symphony is lucky in that we will have a season this year, conductor Ryan Haskins explained. Other orchestras have decided to wait it out. Instead, the Sioux City Symphony Orchestra is coming up with innovative ways to bring music into the lives of fans. Even before COVID-19, we were making steps toward streaming programming, Haskins said. We recognized that some of our audience members prefer not driving at night or going out in winter, but still wanted to experience classical music. Now with the SCSO Live app, audiences can hear the Sioux City Symphony anytime and anywhere they want, even if that means in front of a television set or a computer screen. The pandemic has set the art world reeling, Haskins said. It has impacted both the people whose livelihood is dependent on it, as well as the fans who are our supporters. Staying safe is so important, he continued. A lot of people are anxious to see art return to their lives, but it can't if people don't feel the time is right. So, when will the time be right? Haskins is hoping this spring. That's when the SCSO will be returning to the Orpheum on March 20th with a live program entitled Symphony Strings. An ode to Appalachian spring called Simple Gifts will be performed on April 24th. The season is slated to conclude June 12th with Glorious Brass. Until then, audiences will still be able to celebrate the holidays with Christmas with the Symphony, and it will feature all of the songs you've come to expect, plus some entirely new arrangements. And again, the sidebar repeats that celebrate the season in the comfort of your home. Christmas with the Symphony, featuring a holiday jam with the Haig Brothers, will air on KTIV-TV and will be live streamed at scso.live at 7 p.m. Saturday. For a rundown on scheduled programming, both live and online, go to siouxcitysymphony.org. Madrigal dinners planned at Northwestern from Orange City. The Northwestern College Heritage Singers will be presenting Madrigal dinners at 7:30 p.m. January 22nd and 23rd in the Black Box Theater. The dinners, representing a 16th century medieval feast, will feature a traditional English masque, the Sorry Tellers, or Once Upon a Wine. The masque will be followed by a concert of madrigal pieces presented by the 28-member chamber choir. The dinner will include Italian cranberry porchetta, rosemary roasted red potatoes, honey glazed carrots, tossed salad, and black forest tort. A magic show and a performance by the Heritage Singers will complete the program. Reservations are required and seating capacity is limited due to physical distancing guidelines. Tickets may be attained at nwciowa.edu/music/tickets. It's now 1:30 the hour and time to turn to today's obituaries. From Marcus, Iowa, Fred Wilkins, age 85, died Tuesday, December 15th. Services will be held at a later date. Arrangements are with Ernest Johnson Funeral Home in Marcus. From Orange City, Reverend Donald W. Den Hartog, age 87, died Wednesday, December 16th. Private graveside service will be December 19th at West Lawn Cemetery in Orange City. Memorial services will be at a later date. Arrangements are with Ullman Funeral Home in Orange City. From Lamars, Iowa, Margaret Margie Moyer, and that's M-O-I-R, Margaret Margie Moyer, 83, died Tuesday, December 15th. Services will be December 19th at 10:30 a.m., All Saints Catholic Parish, St. Joseph Church in Lamars. Burial will be after the service in Calvary Cemetery, Lamars. Visitation will be December 18th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the church. Arrangements are with Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Lamars. Services will be available to stream afterwards on the funeral home's website. from Jackson, Nebraska. Mark A. Mansfield, age 51, died Sunday, December 13th. Services will be December 19th at 11 a.m., Rhodey Funeral Home in Kingsley. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service time at the funeral home. Masks and social distancing are required. From Sioux City, Willard Howard Shoulders. Willard Howard Shoulders, age 91 of Sioux City, died Wednesday, December 16th at a local hospital. Services will be 11 a.m. on Saturday at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. Willard was born July 28, 1929, in Buchanan, West Virginia, the son of Roy and Wava Hire Shoulders. He grew up in Stone Coal, West Virginia, where he graduated from high school. Willard joined the Army in 1947 and served for 9.5 years, then served for over 19 years with the Air Force. He served in the Korean War, 3 tours in Vietnam, and served several years in Japan. Willard retired from the military in August of 1974 as a senior master sergeant. He married Aileen Siglin in 1968. Together, they made their home in many places around the country. Willard joined his daughter, Rory, here in Sioux City in 2018. Willard was a member of the VFW, American Legion, Upshur County Sheriff's Department, Air Force Sergeants Association, and the NRA. He loved spending time with his grandchildren and enjoyed classic cars, Japanese whiskey, his cat, Smokey, and was a gun enthusiast and liked. From Sioux City, Patsy Ann Morrow, age 82, died Tuesday, December 15th. Services will be December 19th at 3 p.m., First Christian Church, 2101 Jackson Street, Sioux City. Visitation will be December 19th from 1 to 3 at the church. Masks are required. Arrangements are with Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. From Sioux City, James Ward, 81, died Wednesday, December 16th. Arrangements are pending with Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. From Battle Creek, Edward J. Marth, age 90, died Wednesday, December 16th. Private graveside services will be St. Paul's Lutheran Cemetery, Charter Oak. Celebration of life a day late. Celebration of life will be at a later date. Arrangements are with Christensen Van Houten Funeral Home of Battle Creek. We'll turn now to the sports page, Tigers thwart Mustangs. And this comes to us from Zach James of the Sioux City Journal, and it's from Sioux City. The Morningside College men's basketball team had a frustrating night on Wednesday, to say the least. The Mustangs were held to just 22 first-half points by Dakota Wesleyan and trailed by 21 points at the half. Morningside tried to mount a comeback, but the Tigers held on to win 75-60 on Morningside's campus. Dakota Wesleyan University's win put the Tigers 2 games ahead of Morningside in the Great Plains Athletic Conference standings. Morningside shot 9-for-29 in the first half, as Dakota Wesleyan's defense made the Mustangs work hard for every shot. At one point, the Tigers held the Mustangs scoreless for nearly 5 full minutes. "We got good looks, we just didn't convert," Mustangs coach Jim Sykes said. "They outplayed us and they shot well. We talked at halftime, if we make some of those bunnies we missed, and it's more like a 10-point game, and then we have more of a chance. But when you have to dig out of a 21-point deficit, number one, that takes a lot of energy." The Tigers ended the first half on a 13-2 run that lasted the final 6 minutes, 58 seconds. In that final 6:58, the Mustangs missed 8 straight shots. The Tigers' defense also didn't allow Trey Brown to take many shots inside the paint, as the 6'6" senior center took just 1 in the final 7 minutes of the first half. On the other end, the Tigers built their 13-2 run by making 5 of 11 shots. 4 of those 5 made baskets came from inside the paint. DWU shot 18-for-34 in the first half and made 7 3-pointers in the first 20 minutes. Mason Larson and Nick Harden each had 13 points for the Tigers. I'm going to be very clear. That was not an expectation, Tigers coach Matt Wilbur said of the 43-point half. We played as good a half as we're ever going to play, and the scoreboard clearly showed that. We were ready to play. Our biggest focus was the paint, because Morningside has been playing tremendous from there. Going into the game, the Mustangs were playing at a high level, winning 8 straight games that included close victories against Northwestern and Midland. The last loss for Morningside was on November 11th against Jamestown in the first game of its Great Plains Athletic Conference schedule. The Mustangs are still optimistic, even though they now have 2 losses in the conference. They'll face Hastings on Sunday before taking a couple of weeks off from games and resuming the GPAC schedule in 2021 with a road game at Doan. Our goals are still intact, Sykes said. It's early. We still have a lot of basketball left. We have to play Morningside basketball. Those first 20 minutes were not Morningside basketball on either side of the floor. We have to get back to our roots and not change anything. In another Morningside sports story, Morningside Swimming joins KCAC. From Sioux City, the Kansas Collegiate Athletic Conference, as of Wednesday, December 16th, is announcing that Morningside College will be added as an associate member in both men's and women's swimming and diving in the 2020-2021 school year. The Mustangs join Bethel University, Lincoln College, Midland University, Olivet Nazarene University, Sterling College, Tabor College, and the University of St. Mary institutions competing in men's and women's swimming and diving in the conference. In February 2019, Morningside competed in the first ever KCAC men's and women's swimming and diving invitational before the conference granting conference championship status to the sport in the 2019-2020 school year. This invitational took place at the Dillon Family Aquatic Center at the Fremont Family YMCA in Fremont, Nebraska, and was hosted by Midland University. The 2021 KCAC championships are scheduled for February 4th to 6th at Midland University in Fremont, Nebraska. Sioux City Progress is a tabloid that comes out 4 times a year, and the winter edition just came out. Again, it's called Sioux City Progress, and it tells us what's going on in the city and about the progress that Sioux City has made. So we're going to turn now to several stories from that tabloid. Ready for anything. The City of Sioux City's free Code Red mobile alert app sends critical location-specific Code Red alerts and late-breaking announcements, snow emergencies, water main breaks, etc., right to your smartphone. We've offered this service for nearly a year, explains Ann Westra, communications and public engagement specialist, and our team has used it to communicate weather-related Sioux City transit delays, share information about mask use on buses, and alert specific neighborhoods about water main breaks or temporary street work. When we had a recent water issue, I saw Code Red notification before I knew there was even a problem, says resident Jennifer Gonzalez. I like how the app provides important info in a timely manner. The Code Red mobile alert app is the best way to be ready for anything. Text Alert Sioux City to 99411 to be prepared. And big plans for Badgerow. The Badgerow building, one of downtown Sioux City's most iconic structures, is seeing new life again. Built in 1933, the 12-story high-rise was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1982. After purchasing the Badgerow in March, the City of Sioux City followed an RFP process and recently entered a development agreement with Clarity Development Company, an Omaha-based firm that will invest $20-plus million in the project. A mixed-use plan features a high-end restaurant, cocktail lounge, and office space on the first two floors, 71 market-rate apartments on floors 3 through 11, and a top-floor health club for building tenants and the public. In many ways, this building is the heart and soul of downtown Sioux City, with its classic, beautiful exterior, historic qualities, architectural detail, and incredible views, says Council Member Pete Gretkin. This is an exciting project that will not only promote and engage historic preservation within the community, but also provide a boost to the Sioux City economy. Renovation is scheduled to be finished by 2022. New clinical site. The global pandemic has fast-tracked clinical trials for a COVID vaccine, and one local company, Meridian Clinical Research LLC, has made the move literally to keep up. As Meridian was conducting investigative trials on a vaccine intended to protect against the novel coronavirus over the summer, it quickly outgrew its space in Dakota Dunes. In short order, the clinic opted to lease and renovate an existing building at 4802 Sunnybrook Drive. The new location is four times larger, allowing Meridian to serve more clinical research trials simultaneously, create an on-site lab, develop areas of specialization, and add a recruitment call center. As part of the $2.4 million project, the site will employ 37 staff. Meridian is administrating vaccine trials for numerous pharmaceutical companies developing vaccines to control the COVID-19 virus. Founded in 1999, this Omaha-based company includes 20 research sites and over 130 full-time employees located in seven states. Continuing in the Sioux City Progress tabloid, Warrior Davidson, HIP plus historical. The Sioux City Warriors Hotel is back, and it's better than ever. Built in 1930, the Warrior later fell on hard times and closed in 1976. The 10-story structure sat empty for nearly 40 years before Lou Weinberg partnered with Restoration St. Louis to redevelop this local treasure. Amy and Amrit Gill, founders of Restoration St. Louis, wanted to bring the building back to life in a beautifully authentic way. The company and its partners have restored its grand two-story marble staircase, its Art Deco flair, original terracotta ornamentation and brick exterior, and much, much more. The Warrior is now Sioux City's most historic hotel, or as they're calling it, hipstoric. Gorgeous historic spaces mesh with high-tech updates like mirror TVs, state-of-the-art lighting, and geothermal heating and cooling. Part of the Marriott Autograph Collection and Iowa's only five-star hotel, the Warrior Hotel offers 148 guest rooms, 11 suites, and 22 luxury apartments, along with a ballroom, pre-function space, business space, and exercise center. Several hotel attractions are available to locals, including Woodbury's American Steakhouse, open for dinner and Sunday brunch by reservation, and War Eagle Lanes, an eclectic six-lane bowling alley. Two Finches Spa and The Crown, a rooftop bar and restaurant, will be ready by spring. These are all things that people can come and enjoy, says Amrit Gill, who believes the project will spur even more development in Sioux City's downtown by his firm and others. The neighboring six-story Davidson building has an additional 56 rooms, 20 luxury apartments, two one-bedroom lofts, and street-level commercial space. Originally constructed in 1913, the Davidson building was Sioux City's first office building. Reflecting on an investment of more than $73 million, the combined renovation of the Warrior Hotel and Davidson Building is the Reinvestment District's largest project. Both are on the National Register of Historic Places. The goal was to give Sioux City a premier downtown historic hotel that will be the heartbeat of this community, adds Gill. Now there will be new stories that will be written here. Heart Heroes. The Sioux City Fire Rescue has earned highest honors for implementing quality improvement measures for the treatment of patients who experienced severe heart attacks. The American Heart Association's Mission Lifeline Initiative recently recognized Sioux City Fire Rescue with the EMS Gold Plus Award, the highest level of achievement. Since the mission lifetime goal is to advance the system of care for patients with strokes, cardiac arrests, and other acute life-threatening situations, the program honors EMS responders for excellence. Three cities and one private provider in Iowa received recognition. Sioux City Fire Rescue was the only fire-based ambulance service to earn the EMS Gold Plus Award. Sioux City Fire Rescue and both Sioux City hospitals are gold standard providers for heart attack care, shares Terry Regler, Emergency Medical Services Training Officer. Adds Jim Hayden, EMS Director, if you have a heart issue in Sioux City, we will take terrific care of you. Pet policy. Pet ownership is on the rise, and the city of Sioux City requires all pets to be licensed. We ask residents to be safe and responsible pet owners and register their pets, says Lisa McArdle, city clerk. Ultimately, it's the law, but it's also just good practical advice. If a pet is lost, that license tag can help get them back home. Pet licenses are valid for 1 year and expire December 31st, with renewals due March 1st. Pets must be vaccinated for rabies and licensed before a permit can be issued. Pet owners may apply for pet license renewals starting December 1st. For details, call 712-224-7387. And Inclusive Sioux City, to help unite our community at a time when many areas are being divided, the city has created a new, quote, Inclusive Sioux City, end quote, advisory committee and added a community engagement specialist position. Our hope is to create economic development opportunities, employment opportunities, and cooperation among communities, shares Bob Padmore, city manager. This is an effort to make sure everyone who lives in Sioux City feels like a valued member of our community in work, play, and social activities. We want to enhance the quality of life for all who live in the city. The new committee and staff position are the direct result of Padmore's conversations with community leaders that began in early summer. Through numerous meetings with the NAACP, he explains, we learned that inclusiveness and diversity needed to be addressed in our community. We want to foster equity, diversity, and inclusiveness, not only in city government, but in our community, and these are the steps in the right direction, adds Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore. Along with city staff, the new committee will include appointed voting members representing a broad mix of the community and including representatives from the NAACP and Unity in the Community, two residents at large from Sioux City and members from the Native American, Latino, Asian, LGBTQ, and faith communities. Direct to Denver. United Express, operated by SkyWest Airlines, is now operating nonstop service daily to and from the Denver International Airport out of Sioux Gateway Airport, Brigadier General Bud Day Field. Service to Denver provides yet another reason for travelers to choose Sioux City as their airport, notes Dave Bernstein, president of the Sioux Gateway Airport Board of Trustees. In these challenging times, Sioux City is the ideal airport to travel to and from as it is small, clean, and not congested, making travel safer and less stressful. Denver is a top destination for area leisure and business travelers and a great connecting hub for anyone going west. United provides 460 daily flights to 170-plus destinations from Denver. Future leaders. The Sioux City Mayor's Youth Commission recently honored 25 local students from grades 4 to 7 as its newest young ambassadors. nominated by teachers, family, or other mentors, these students demonstrate the six pillars of character: trustworthiness, respect, responsibility, fairness, caring, and citizenship, and come from public and private schools in our community. Students in Mayor's Youth Commission spend considerable time volunteering in the community and will mentor these young ambassadors in the 2020-21 school year, states Mary Koster, Mayor Youth Commission's adult advisor. The goal: to prepare young leaders for a lifetime of service. The Young Ambassadors Program is a partnership between the City of Sioux City, Sioux City Mayor's Youth Commission, and Siouxland Cares. Renewable energy. For the last 2 years, Sioux City's wastewater treatment plant has been upgrading its facility to recover methane produced through the wastewater treatment process and convert it into a renewable pipeline quality natural gas. Since the early 1960s, Sioux City Wastewater Treatment Plant has utilized a solids digestion process that has naturally created gases, but until recently, those gases were flared into the atmosphere. With the treatment plant's enhanced facility, this biogas can now be recovered, cleaned, compressed, and sold as vehicle fuel. Experts estimate the volume of natural gas produced will replace what is annually used by 2,000-plus vehicles. Mark Sims, Utilities Director, says the new process will provide a clean energy source using more sustainable practices. In addition, he says the revenue generated can be used to keep utility rates lower for our customers, offset operating costs, or have other beneficial purposes. Sioux City will be the second wastewater facility in Iowa to complete this renewable fuel initiative and could see full payback for the project in as little as 4 years. This concludes the reading of the Sioux City Journal for today, Friday, December 18th, 2020. Thank you for listening to your Sioux City Journal.
This is Jim Ralston, and I'm with IRIS Short Take from the Iowa Curiosities. Farmers and their toys, Dyersville, Iowa. The wisdom on bumper stickers is true, and those with the most toys truly do win. Then the National Farm Toy Museum in Dyersville is a winner many times over, with two floors of more than 30,000 farm toys and exhibits, ranging from row after row of common tractors to combines, harvesters, and haulers, all the way down the extensive agricultural machinery lineup to an anhydrous ammonia tanker. The museum is a shrine and miniature to the heavy equipment Iowa farmers fuss over, endlessly fix, periodically live in during planting or harvesting, and tirelessly operate to bring home the grain or the beans that bring home the bacon. And don't let the word toy fool you. The only thing toy-like about these farm toys is that they are built to 1/16th or 1/32nd scale, and don't have internal combustion engines. This is Iowa, after all. Farm machines aren't child's play, even when they're toys. Most of the toys are stunningly accurate, not to mention beautiful. Replicas of tractors or combines with particular makers like John Deere and Case, from particular years, with details accurate down to the windshield wipers. Children play with these toys not only to have fun, they got a vocational education in heavy equipment. Highlights of the museum include an exhibit explaining the notion of scale that features a full-size replica of a John Deere tractor accompanied by a row of successfully smaller scale models, from 1/2 scale all the way down to a realistically looking tractor you can carry in your pocket. Upstairs, look for more tractors and harvesters, enclosed in glass cases, more perhaps than you've ever hoped to see. And though the word toy does technically appear in this museum's name, don't expect much playing around. Tractors, trucks, trailers, and combines, even at 1/32nd or 1/64 scale, are way too wrapped up in Iowa's blood, sweat, and sorrow to be simple objects of play. Don't be surprised if you see some old-timer kicking the tires of a tiny Case combine, wondering how it would hold up harvesting more than 2,000 acres. Or some young, unquietly cussing pocket-sized John Deere because it won't turn over. The National Farm Toy Museum is at the intersection of US 20 and Iowa Highway 136 in Dyersville. Open daily from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., the museum also hosts a number of special events. Exhibits throughout the year, the largest of which is the granddaddy of all farm toy shows, held the first full weekend in November. For more information, call 563-875-2727 or visit www.nationalfarmtoymuseum.com. That was an excerpt from Iowa Curiosities, Quirky Characters, Roadside Oddities, and Other Offbeat Stuff by Eric Jones, Dan Coffey, and Barrett Thorkelson.